Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Hollow Cult. You know what that means. We're here to try to kickstart this work week, get things off on the right foot. Hope everyone had an excellent holiday weekend that celebrated, got to spend some time with your family, the ones you love, just people you like being around. You know how it is. Kyle has compiled some interesting information on this Cult of the Black Cube, and I'm stoked to get in on that. But before we do, we got to get through the business. So check us out at all our social medias: Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. You'll find us there. Come join the Hollow Cult. Be part of the community. You know the drill. It's awesome. If you have a listener experience you'd like for us to feature on our Thursday show, Kyle's got some info that you're going to want to do that.
I do. It's pretty easy. It's not hard. You can write your story out in as much detail as you possibly can. Shoot it over to the email, which is going to be hollowskypodcast@gmail.com. You can call or text the holophone, 618-556-0837. You can also send us real mail. Or just cool stuff, maybe even scary stuff, to Hollow Sky Podcast, P.O. Box 145, Fieldon, Illinois, 62031. It's much appreciated. Each and every time you guys reach out to us and send us cool stuff, stories, comments, all of it, we greatly appreciate it.
Especially when you send us haunted and cursed objects.
This is true. We are compiling them in the recording room.
Yeah.
So that when we record, it gets extra weird.
That way, when the old gods come to fight us, we have a plethora of paranormal backup to hit them with.
This is a valid point.
Yeah. If you'd like to support the show, plenty of ways to do it. We have a Patreon, which by the time this drops, will be down to one tier. $7 tier. You can go over there and sign up for that if you like some extra content, some extra stuff, ad-free shows, early shows, stuff of that nature. Check that out. Patreon.com, Hollow Sky Podcast. We have a merch store up at our website, hollowskypodcast.com. Go over there, check the merch out, see if there's some hollow swag you'd like to rep, and just do the thing. We got a Venmo if you'd like to throw some pocket change into that for all of our bad habits. We appreciate it. Best thing you can do, share the show word of mouth. Share it on social media. Share it with all your favorite podcasters. Just keep the cult growing. The more people we have tuning in, hopefully the quicker we get out of whatever this funk is that we're in, download wise and as far as getting out there. We've been, I don't know if it's a shadow ban, I don't know if we've been blacklisted or what the deal is, but we're kind of on the downhill for a little bit. We're going to try to turn that around.
You'd think it'd be pretty easy since we talk so much about the paranormal. You think the paranormal would get our back at this point?
Yeah, maybe it will.
But you know what? These guys are some real ones. We can put on for them.
The bastard sons of the paranormal.
This is true.
Remember, you heard it here first, folks. So if anybody else tries to hijack that moniker, you call them out. Say, listen, nerds.
I doubt ye.
It's already over here. What else we got? Oh yeah, wherever you listen to podcasts, go and leave us a 5-star rating and review. If I'm on my game, I'll find them and I'll shout them out, which I'm prepared today. Our 5-star rating and review for the week comes to us from our friend LJ Skies. LJ says, bangers all around, 5 stars. Truly excellent podcast. Don't know if I could work overnights without it. Great work, gentlemen. LJ, first and foremost, thanks so much for taking the time to hit those 5 stars and leave us those kind words. We're glad that we could be your wingman getting through them night shifts, because they are not fun. I've been there. They're rough. So we can do anything to help perk you up a little bit. We're here for it.
I agree. Them night shifts get rough. So it is cool that you're able to kind of put on some background noise to get you through that mess.
I feel that in my soul. But with that being said, we are going to dive right in to this cult of the Black Cube. Interestingly enough, as we stated in the last episode, me and Kyle do not really talk about what we're writing about during the week. Kind of bring it in blind just to kind of be able to riff off each other. But an interesting note in this one, the Black Cube here was mentioned in the Schuylkill notes that we talked about last week, which is weird. That is a weird synchronicity. So shout out to the people who put the boots on the ground. I guess we've got some people out in Schuylkill County looking for some notes to send our way. Stoked on that.
For sure. It's going to be awesome if we get one.
Yeah. Yeah. Or many. We can have a Schuylkill note collection.
I mean, if we get a bunch, either way, they're getting framed and hung up on the wall.
Yeah.
So it's got to be done.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, it has to. It has to.
But we said that at the same time.
Synchronicities. So, kind of launching off into this odd story that I found. I hear a lot about the Black Cube, and I don't know a ton about it. So I'm like, you know what? I think it's time to start looking into it, which, like Steve said, is weird, considering his story, which seemingly has no connection, actually has a connection. I feel like the odds are slightly against us, but it panned out that way. So I start looking into it, trying to find information on it. I was kind of just trying to more or less find the history of it and the theories behind it and what it connects to. And I end up finding something a little bit weirder. And I find this book, because it's really annoying when you search for stuff, because it'll be like, oh, here's the topic you want in this book. Here's a link to the book. And you're like, son, this is a waste of my time. Because I do it like Steve does. You'll kind of search something and then you just start like opening a new tab, all these different ones. So you don't even really look at it until you start, you know, digging through. But I actually found it popped up as a PDF of this book. And me and Steve kind of were looking at it the other day, and they're limited issued copies of the book. They're some of them not so expensive enough for a book with what, like 300 pages. They're like $70.
Yeah, it's
on pretty the cheap end. And then we found ones for thousands of dollars. Apparently, like I said, apparently they're limited copies. The covers are different. Very, very interesting. I'd like to try to grab one. Anyways, this book was written by Arthur Morrows. Obviously not his real name, pseudonym. However, it is considered a grimoire. And possibly, from what I understand, a three-part series. I would be extremely interested in getting my hands on the book that I'm actually writing about. Kind of disturbing cover. One of them's kind of a weird cover, but the other one is a little bit more disturbing. But like I said, this one in particular that I actually saw, it was only 900 copies. Anyways, the story starts with Arthur explaining what happened to him during school, during high school in particular. He was in a really bad car accident and got hurt. It messed up his spine, where it actually connects to his hips, which left him in an extremely bad way. He was in constant pain, and it also caused one of his legs to essentially be useless. So he was always, you know, he was hobbling around on with a cane and stuff like that in high school, which, you know, even without being in constant pain like he was, just hobbling around like that in high school, you're not going to be in a very good state of mind, because that's like your go, go, go years, you know, where you're trying to hang out with everybody. You're trying to go do cool things. And now you're just kind of up shit creek.
Oh, yeah. I broke my leg the summer before freshman year.
That sucks.
Yeah. Wasn't a fun time.
I remember when Lil Ernie broke both his wrists. Which that, I can imagine how bad that was.
Yeah.
But this happened to Arthur at a time before what was known as the opioid epidemic. So all the doctors did essentially to help mitigate his pain was just pump him full of painkillers. He described it to where he felt like he was basically in a coma most of the time because he was so heavily medicated. Like, that was their answer to any bit of his pain or his issues, was here's more pills, here's more pills, here's more pills. So he learns to kind of semi cope with it and push on with life. So he gets to the point where he goes to college, and he was interested in humanities. So he decides to go into psychology and philosophy. He also takes Latin and religious studies. So I take it, you know, essentially from that lineup that he wasn't a dumb individual, because I feel like learning Latin would probably be really difficult. And then you have psychology, philosophy, and religion, which I feel like requires thought process, like a very in-depth thinking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're going to use a lot of that brain power. I honestly feel like it would probably be fucking exhausting sometimes.
Yeah. Just learning a new language is exhausting.
Yeah.
Then going through all that as well, like the theology and all that, it would be a lot to take in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, that's a lot of deep thought. I just feel like you'd be mentally wore out every single day.
Yeah. It'd break you down pretty quick, you'd think.
Yeah. Yeah. But he also had to pick an elective. And this is fucking crazy, because at this college, they had some pretty interesting classes listed. Things like death and dying, magic and the occult, and ancient myth and semiotics. Yeah, I said that right. So he decides to go with magic and the occult.
Good choice.
Yeah. So he starts researching for his final project, which he called Black Magic in Antiquity. He said he chose this because I can relate to this type of reasoning. He said he chose this because he was a huge fan of Conan with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he had this whole love with like wizards and stuff. I'm like, I can respect that.
I thought you were going to say death metal.
Also relatable.
Yeah.
But so during his research of the dark sorcerer aspect, he stumbled onto Roman necromancy. And it was a ceremony that was designed to placate Chthonic gods in exchange for favors. And I think in Latin it was, I'm not going to say this right.
I feel like you're going to invoke a demon just trying to pronounce this.
Cool. Perfect.
I'm here for it though.
Do ut des.
Yeah.
D-O-U-T-D-E-S. Which means I give so that you, deity, will give in Latin.
I'm pretty sure we just conjured
a
spirit.
That's the thing about Latin is we suck at foreign languages, so odds are if we do any of this stuff, we are definitely going to screw it up. And like you said, probably summon things that we don't intend to do.
We suck at regular reading.
Also true. And so, English.
Trying to read other stuff is going to, I mean, it's going to make for good internet and podcasts. So just good for you guys.
B, are you not entertained? He said the ritual was extremely complex and seemed to play on a ritual by Aeneas in the Aeneid, where you would dig a ditch and fill it with black animals and let their blood flow into the earth. He said that as he read, it felt very strange, like maybe these weren't just fabrications after all. Because if you think about it, these rituals that they performed back in the day were very expensive, so to speak, because of the large amount of resources that they would invest into these rituals. Like in this case here, the amount of animals that they would, you know, sacrifice for these rituals. Or, you know, you look at the Aztecs, and that was on like a person aspect of it, like sacrificing people. So like he said, the resources of these rituals were not just like nil. It took a lot to do these things. So it made him think, well, maybe there is something to this. And further to that point, you also wouldn't keep sacrificing these amounts of resources with absolutely no results.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So he even states at this point that he doesn't even really believe in magic. But because of the constant pain he was in, he was a little more willing to believe in the possibility of. Also aiding to this was the fact that most of the teachers here, they weren't magicians or anything of that nature, but they were very well versed in these topics. And they would speak about how they would witness very strange, unexplainable things when spending time with people like American shamans or African witch doctors and Sufi masters. Believe it or not, they all expressed this concern about how magic would scar people that chose to use it. Scar is it metaphorically speaking. As it happens, most people that apparently chose to use magic are sick and damaged people. Academics would actually end up calling this the shamanic illness, because they say that the spirits would contact the potential shaman during a severe illness or bad accident. And I wonder if that's because, you know, we talk a lot, or we've had a lot of talks here recently about the veil and thinning the veil. What if by you creeping closer to death, that in itself is thinning that essentially your veil, your connection to the veil?
Yeah. Because you hear people who are close to death essentially seeing loved ones that have already passed and whatnot, which kind of leads into that same kind of thought process.
Yeah. It's very interesting. And like I said, they so much so that they, you know, came up with a name with the shamanic illness.
Yeah, I'm trying to look that up. Yeah. It's weird.
It is weird. But as you can imagine, with Arthur and him being in the state that he's in, you know that he's essentially desperate. Desperate enough that he's considering using magic of whatever degree to help with his problems. If you think about it, we talk about intent all the time and willingness. Imagine the signals he sends off as he considers using magic. Imagine the intent as he performs said magic. I feel like that his amount of pure desperation and commitment to said magic at that point just it like puts out a beacon of energy for whatever is out there waiting for contact, essentially.
Man. I found a little section here on the shamanic illness, which I feel like we should touch on a little bit, which is because that's I'd never heard that before, I guess. And it just
I haven't really, either.
Really interesting to me. So this is from settingsunwellness.com. It's a blog. They say for an individual to become a shaman, he or she must be called to take on the role. This calling or initiation is typically not blissful, fun, nor healing. The shamanic calling is usually filled with terrifying and nightmarish visions or visits from spirits. If a person is called to take on the responsibility of a shaman, they usually fall very ill to the brink of death. The shamanic illness, shamanic disease, or shamanic crisis is a very typical occurrence among shamans. The initiation process can start with a spontaneous visionary state which represents a psycho-spiritual death and rebirth. It's portrayed as a tantamount to initiation by the spirits. That is, a situation when the spirits are deemed to have selected an individual and inflicted pain and prolonged suffering on them in order to force them to become a shaman. In cases of shamanic illness or sickness, the shaman's advice is that the only way the person can be cured is by being initiated as a shaman. Although these events are not always spontaneous, a future shaman can be initiated by an elder who believes a person is called to take on the responsibility and lifestyle. This could be because of the family lineage, or if another shaman believes the person is being asked to take on the role. During the apprenticeship, the elder shaman can induce visionary states to his students by any sacred technique that provides extraordinary experience. Many future shamans go through a process of their own psychological and physical illness, which can sometimes kill an initiated if not properly guided or trained. Shamans who are called seem to go through many bizarre psychological and psycho-spiritual crises. These can include vivid dreams, visions, sometimes about death, but also about renewal. Future shamans can also experience seizures, out-of-body experiences, and suffer from near-death experiences. It's crazy.
It is. And so, I mean, it really is. It's like pushing you as close to that, the other side as possible.
Yeah.
In order to make contact with those beings.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically like a test, you know, like, how far are you willing to go to be one of
right.
us?
I mean, some of them die.
Yeah. Call me under a rock or whatever, but I'd never heard that before.
Me either. It's really interesting that you were able to find that and kind of expand on it. I feel like it helps understand that side a little bit more.
Let you know and the power of the stuff he's getting ready to like dip his fingers into.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, imagine like the amount of desperation in itself that he has Because I can only imagine feeling like that all the time, being that doped up, being in that much pain, losing essentially function of your body in high school up until, you know, and to this point in a college. It does, it puts a psychological damper on your life.
It'd be terrible.
It really would. It just, the psychological aspect of itself, it just, it crushes your confidence and just makes your life that much more unenjoyable. If you're the wrong person, you know, a lot of people like myself would probably let it weigh on me. And sure, you'd get over it and you'd learn to cope with it, but don't act like it wouldn't beat you down, because it would. It would definitely beat you down. But anyways, so if you think about, or sorry, for anyone wondering, because I sure am, about the chthonic, meaning from the earth or under the earth, Hades would be an example of this, because he talks about contacting the chthonic gods or chthonic spirits, whichever way you want to put it. You can clearly see a path he's walking here, and he explains it. He was always drawn to the chthonic gods when researching said topics. Arthur also points out how when he was learning of magic, these made more sense to him because of the high cost you paid when using magic. So it makes me wonder if the way his brain analyzed it is, if you wanted a true outcome, then you're going to pay your pound of flesh, so to speak, right? It's not going to just be as simple as throw some sugar in a bowl and set it out, and then you get what you asked for.
Yeah, you're going to pay some dues to get the full experience, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. Because if it was that simple, I mean, logically thinking, if it was that simple, everyone would be trying to do it.
Yep.
Yeah. Because you would, the risk to reward ratio would be so nil that I gotta give up some fucking oregano and some sugar and I'm straight. Like, I can get my leg fixed. It's all I got to do. Everybody would do it.
Yeah.
So I mean, I hate to say it, but it is kind of sound logic to a degree. Which, like I said, that type, so that it's naturally going to draw him to what I would consider the darker side of things, because the darker side of things more frequently asks for the pound of flesh versus this stuff.
Yeah, big rewards require big risks.
Yes, that's a very good way to put that. So at this point, he's pretty much determined to venture down this magical path. He does his research and decides to contact the Demains, which are the ghost gods of the Roman netherworld. He says, and I kind of almost chuckle to myself of this because it's still kind of nuts to think about, but he's like, this is a pretty smart direction for me to go. I know I have Roman ancestry, and if you think about it, my ancestors most likely sacrificed to these entities for centuries. And it's just crazy that, like, in his brain, he's like, this is the smart path for me to take. Like, that verbiage in itself is like, I wouldn't call it smart. Educated, maybe, I guess, because you are linking with your quote unquote Roman ancestry there. So I guess, like, if you were a betting man, then sure, bank on the Romans because of your ancestry.
At However, least they smart know of your lineage, you'd think.
Yeah. So in the end, he crafted his ritual. He used some of John Gager's cursed tablets and binding spells for some of the passages. On his altar, he had offerings of wine, water, bread, and a few other gifts. He also put on a toga, but something I didn't know, he said, I, of course, covered my head to show humility to these deities. So he ends up, he's like, fuck it, I'm going for it. He gets it all set up, puts on his stuff. He starts to read his ritual and pour the wine, water, then bread into the bowl. Using a knife, he cuts his hand, his left hand, and let the blood pour into the bowl. He said the act of cutting himself was probably one of the most significant of his entire life. Because as the blood hit the cauldron, the room, which was warm because it was fall, so he had the house a little bit warmer than normal, this warm room suddenly plummets in temperature. Without the flames in the room even flickering, the candles, like the real candles, actually began to dim. They didn't go out. They weren't flickering. They just started to visually dim. He said the darkness of the room consumed and started to become oppressive. Arthur said he could tell he wasn't alone in this room anymore. He could feel several spirits and could instantly tell that not all of them were friendly.
Damn it,
he assumed, yeah. But I mean, you're contacting the underworld here.
Yeah, you don't like. I can't attest to it because I never made blood oaths with fucking old gods. But you, like, when you're reaching out, you don't know who's going to be reaching back, you know?
Yeah.
What if you put the wrong kind of bread in that bowl or some shit?
Yeah.
And you get something you don't want.
Well, think about how binding it is to use your blood, your life force.
Yeah.
I feel like that is significant in itself.
Yeah. I feel it's
pretty serious.
Yeah. You're right. Just so like, it seems, how do you even know the research you're doing is like
the right,
yeah, the right research,
dude? That's what scares me so much about, not that I really want to dabble in magic, but that's what, okay, a good example is like when I try to make protection runes on my little wooden blocks that you can put on a necklace or keychain or whatever. I don't know enough about said history to know that that rune is actually a protection rune. You know what I mean? So it's worrisome to start putting that intent into something and burning it into the wood when you do, and then wearing it, having it on my keychain 24/7. It's worrisome because you don't necessarily, like, I've done a lot of research as much as I can with current, you know, time restraints, but I just don't know. Like, there's that part of me that doesn't quite know.
Yeah.
And that could just be a misrepresentation on the internet through most people's eyes, which is tricking them into using a rune that's supposed to be for good and protection to actually be for damnation or sacrificing essence to an entity, for all I know.
If there's one thing humans are shitty at, it's passing information and knowledge on to future generations.
Yes. Yes.
It's something to be said, like when you were talking about the runes, like you kind of put your own energy into it as you're making it, you know, you kind of have your own intent. And I think that within itself holds a lot of power when you're physically creating it.
Yeah, they say that it does. They say that you can essentially create your own runes if you wish. It's just the amount of intent that you put into that and what you want it to mean. So it's kind of a cool concept. But he said, Arthur says, by offering his own blood, he assumed that whatever would come would be friendly. And to me, that seems like a really fucking stupid assumption.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Because it's like, I don't know a lot about summoning deities and spirits and such, but I just feel like that life force is sacred. And the way it sounded is it sounded like, and if you remember, in the beginning of his ritual, he was trying to summon, you know, demains, which are the gods of the Roman netherworld or Netherland, however it was put.
Sound an awful like an awful lot like demons.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is that it said gods, not one specific. Like you would do your research into Aphrodite and be like, all right, I'm gonna fuck with this one. I'm not trying to fuck with Hades over here. But I'm trying to get this one. But he just, it's like he just put, you know, the food or the blood, which would be bait, just sprayed it into the netherworld and was like, come get it, boys.
See which one I get.
Yeah. Yeah, put a quarter in the damn gumball machine to see which one you get, you know?
Yeah. It seems a little risky.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, and to be fair, and he also doesn't exactly know exactly what he's doing either.
I feel that.
So yeah, we can relate. So from here, the cauldron / glass bowl that he was using actually explodes. It explodes into a bunch of tiny pieces all over the entire room. And at this moment, he's like, the amount of like real fear that took over me was insane. He's like, I couldn't even speak Latin anymore. He's like, I just started to apologize to the spirits for disturbing them. And after about 10 minutes, he could feel the bad spirit begin to fade away. And as it did, the room actually got brighter and warmer. He's like, I am never doing this shit again. I'm an idiot for even dabbling in black magic. What in the actual fuck was I thinking? This was the dumbest decision I've ever made by far.
If you're looking for a red flag to chill out, your offering bowl exploding into a million pieces is probably a red flag.
Yes, I would agree.
Just throw that out there.
I would 100% agree. So, Arthur makes another dumb assumption. He assumed that after the room got brighter and warmer and less evil, that it was all over. It's done. Right? It definitely wasn't.
Dummy.
He said a few, and this is crazy because I won't mention names. I'm not even going to allude any further to anybody else about specific situation, but Steve already relatively knows where I'm going because this is interesting to me. A few nights later, he has a lucid dream. It was a dream so important to this man that he literally feels like it was a sacred experience, and sharing this almost tanks that experience for him. Like, this was meant for me and only me. I should not be sharing this. But he states that by not sharing this, the rest of everything wouldn't make sense. And this, Steve, is almost precisely the connection that I refer to So in this dream, and the dreams are not similar, but you look past that into the context, he appears on a mountain in a strange place, mostly desert with strange colors in the sky. Like he describes them oranges and reds in the sky. This place has a feeling of hostility towards all life. But in front of him was something unforgettable and bizarre. There was a massive pulsing black energy mass. He describes a ripple of color that comes across this black mass. And he describes it in a way of like when you see gas in the water, it has that shine, like that rainbowy shine to it. That's how he describes it. This mass actually begins to speak to him in his mind, stating that the ritual, this thing goes, your ritual got my attention. This deity actually offered Arthur a choice. He says, you can go back to which you came and return to your normal life and live in the constant pain, which is so severe that you considered black magic in the first place. Or I can fix you, stitch you together, your broken spine, and consume all of your trauma. But it would also do more than that. It would set him on a different path than what it says fate had intended. Which is terrifying in itself right there. I didn't even think about it till just now. That's almost acknowledging fate as almost like another deity. And it's going, oh, we can change this shit.
That gave me goosebumps. That's bro. Gross. That's gross.
He said this black mass says that Arthur would go to interesting places, learn to do strange things, and have a very exciting life. In return, Arthur would serve as a messenger for this deity's essence, would run through him, and all of Arthur's agendas and ambitions would come second to what this entity wanted. And Arthur said, right then and there, without a moment hesitation, I accepted the offer from this deity.
He just like, send it.
Deal.
Send it.
Right out of the gate. Without any hesitation. That offer gets put on the paper, the table. And he says, done.
Sign that contract.
Done.
He wasn't going back. He wasn't going back to the old life.
No. And he said, instantly he felt this thing pour into him like ice through his veins. And then he wakes up. However,
that's gross.
Within a month, within a fucking month, all of his ailments were fixed. The doctors basically say this is a miracle. There's no way this happens. Miracle. The next part here.
That opens a lot of doors and a lot of conversations people ain't going to want to have right now.
Yeah. Right? So this next part gets a little weird. It almost feels like things I know I've described before, but this thing didn't communicate with clear images or words. And this is, like, this directly links for me with Egress and like how I explained being connected to something, because it wouldn't like contact Arthur from the ether and be like, Arthur, I need you to go here and do this and to do that. No. It would, Arthur said it would contact through what he calls nudges, like surges of intuitions and a lot of unusual synchronicity. Then it did something unexpected. It showed him who it really was. And it was Saturn, the black cube, the Lord of Time. It then made him go into graduate school. So this entity says, no, Arthur, go to graduate school. Go into a doctorate program in mythology at an Ivy League school. Arthur has been studying various cults of Saturn since then. Apparently, Saturn has many guises and manifestations. After 25 years of doing this, Arthur says the entity has completely kept its promise. It has also been a very interesting venture for Arthur, being that he has met many different people who are also allies and devotees to the very same entity. Some of them are very large public figures. He also states how he gets to live a pretty decent lifestyle, one that would make his academic colleagues envious. But all of this, 25 years of research, pathfinding, all of it was for a reason. Because after 25 years, the entity finally reaches out and tells Arthur, it's time. It's time for you to write about the entire experience. However, Arthur shares, he expresses how he doesn't want to write about it. He doesn't want to write about it because he doesn't want to share the secrets and insights with strangers. Even more so that it took him 2 decades of suffer and travel to acquire all of this knowledge, all these experiences. That was his pilgrimage. That was his journey. And I do kind of relate to that aspect of it, of like, I put the goddamn work in. I get that. I really do. Like, I, from that aspect, I can 100% respect that. Yeah. Because he's right. He put the work in, right?
Yeah.
But, Steve, how many times have we heard that when it comes to the occult? They do not like sharing those secrets. Arthur also explains how going on this journey into the occult is a very personal and sacred experience. He states that this knowledge and experience from contact with Saturnian are so intimate and beyond conceptualization. He says that any attempt made to convert conceptually what is basically beyond conceptualization is bound to fail, or at least is in danger of being misunderstood. So I'm kind of taking away that it's very easy to misunderstand what he's writing about and then portray a different message to any audience other than what Arthur is intending. I think he's greatly afraid that people are going to read what he puts into this work, and almost like the Bible, take away their version of the story. Yeah.
Just misconstrue.
Yes.
Everything
like he's going to have, and you can tell just by conceptualization and using, like, he is going to use pretty big words, pretty intelligent words. He's going to make it very wordy and just really smart. And I think it's the way of people too. We like to take away what we want to take away from it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we like to paint our own pictures. And I think that bothers Arthur a lot.
Yeah. Despite what anyone says, we all have our own personal narrative that we want to follow. And if we can bend the information to follow our narrative, like, we're going to do it, whether it be subconsciously or on purpose. Like, it's just going to happen. That's just how human brains work.
Yes. And it is also troublesome from Arthur's point of view in writing this book, because I think the way Arthur has experienced it and learned about it, I feel like he, even if he, whether he knows or doesn't, there is a path that must be walked. And the fact that people can see different versions of his path, that doesn't sit well with Arthur. He's not going to be there to answer questions along somebody else's journey. He's not going to be there to be like, no, that is not what I meant. What I mean is this right here. Don't put your fucking spin on my words. Because, you know, if you think about it too, what if, and it doesn't elaborate on any of this, this is just me spitballing here, but what if there is a contract breaker for someone to misunderstand Arthur's words, the representation of this deity? What if that worries Arthur?
I didn't think about that. And then all of a sudden he goes back.
There could be blowback for Arthur because he's the one that put it into words.
Yeah.
Because what it sounds like to me, and I'm sure you're going to feel the same, it feels like a goddamn power grab. Like, this entity wants its shit to be out there for the masses.
Feels very familiar.
Right. But that's kind of how it feels like it. Because why else would you entitle Arthur with a life like this? Now, of course, Arthur paid his pound of flesh, so to speak, and went on these journeys and took the time. And I mean, because we couldn't sit here and fathom the amount of time it took him to learn. I mean, I did a semester of mythology, and that's tough enough. But learning all these other religions and cults and psychology and philosophy and all this on top of it, I feel like we talked in the beginning, that's got to be exhausting. It's got to be taxing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of information to try to retain there.
Yeah. I mean, on the flip side of that, he does have a specific end of the bargain that he's got to uphold.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got to do it. I mean, that's Arthur's pound of flesh.
It reminds me a lot of the old boy on TikTok that we refer a lot to.
Yeah.
And working with these deities they call demons. And how it's a give and take.
Yeah.
And how he's like, it's the same in working with angels. He says they're a lot of them are cut from the same cloth, and they work in very similar ways when you're dealing with them.
Yep. Yep. But in the end here, and this is Arthur's words, he says, I hope that this book finds you well. and helps you on your journey. He also states that Saturn himself is nothing more but a manifestation of a greater continuum, chaos. And that's how the very beginning of this book closes, comes to a close. That is simply the introduction to said book. He also says the Saturn is a manifestation of a greater continuum chaos, which we will get into later. So all right, I fuck with this. I gotta go digging around. I gotta get these books. Do that. Because like I said, I was literally looking for just an overall history of the Black Cube, you know, just normal research. I stumble on this and I read, because it was late at night when I started writing this. I'm talking 10 o'clock. And for whatever reason, I get on that PDF and I just start reading just a little bit here. And man, it's hooks instantly, go whoosh, right in me. And I felt like I'd done a line of coke and I'm ready to rock now. Like, I'm not tired at all. I get up and dude, I sat there and wrote for probably 3 hours straight, reading and writing and did all this in one night because I was so pulled into this story.
It is quite the intro, first off, because now I'm interested in it. Now I'm going to need more. I'm going to go out on a limb and say we're probably going to get a couple more pieces of this.
Fingers yeah, crossed. I'm gonna definitely do my best to, because I don't exactly remember. Let me see if I can get. Yeah, because I still have it pulled up because I'm like I said, I have the PDF. I'm going to go through it. But that was the very beginning. And then you have section one, scholarly materials on Saturn, which is like, it's going to explain Saturn in the Islamic text, classical tradition, and Indian tradition. Then you have the Saturnine Gnosis, consisting of the spiritual path, the Saturnine deity analysts interpretation, the Saturnine path. And then you have the practice, which is like devotion or establishing a shrine, magic, sacred time, Saturnine rituals. There's a bunch of different rituals here. And then there's the conclusion of this, which would be the conclusion of this book. But the, like some of these rituals, man, the Rite of Chains is one of them. The Oracle of Kronos.
That's
shit like that.
It is weird that like it feels like whoever wrote the Schuylkill Notes was also studying similar stuff. Makes me wonder if they were delving into the Cult of Saturn or Cult of the Black Cube. Because one of the Schuylkill Notes starts out with just the word chaos. And then it says secret societies are tied to Saturn, Lord of the Rings, Lord of Time.
Yeah, which it specifically states that it's the Lord of Time.
It's weird. Shit's weird.
It's weird, dude. It's weird. Because I hear people reference it all the time. You know, the Black Cube of Saturn. Yada, yada, yada. You hear it referenced constantly. And I'm like, you know what? I want to start learning more about this so I can better understand these references and name drops when it comes time.
Yeah. He's also the Lord of Karma. Primary meaning, Saturn has several monikers, including Time Lord and Lord of Karma. His jurisdiction covers old age, laws of limitation, fortitude, fear, conservation, reconstruction, perseverance, self-discipline, and self-respect. To the ancients, he was the oldest of the gods, the last known planet.
I'm interested, man. I'm definitely interested.
If you look at some of his imagery, He almost looks like there's a bunch of different imagery, of course, going through the different like echelons and eras, like Greek and this, that, and the other. But a lot of them kind of have him in like Grim Reaper-esque cloak with a scythe and some sort of timepiece with him. Either a clock in the background or some of them in the side that has a hourglass.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely.
Which I feel like is a pretty common image. Like you see that more than you think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the Reaper with a hourglass.
Oh, this image is nuts. Oh, this shit's crazy. It looks like this giant deity and stand there with its arms out and its face is a skull, but where the eyes are, it cuts into the triangle all-seeing eye. And in one hand, it's got like an hourglass. And the other hand, it has like this globe. It's wild. I'll send it to you.
Hell yeah.
But anyway, sorry, got on a tangent here. Looking at Saturn imagery. Definitely a great intro into this. I'm curious. I hope you delve into it a little bit more.
Oh, I'm definitely going to.
Because it doesn't sound like, I don't know. My whole thought process and dealing with ancient deities is kind of in a weird place right now. With everything going on and not knowing what's up and what's down, what's good and what's bad.
So yeah, that's I definitely understand that aspect of it.
So I'm very
trying to learn what's up and down, what's good and bad.
Yeah.
I feel like I know humanity, man, and that's the problem. I know humanity likes to bend and twist things to their will.
Yeah, you have if you look at Brotherhood of the Snake, you have an ancient sect of powerful people literally telling you, we are going to take the things that are good and portray them as bad. We are going to take the things that are bad and portray them as good. So people focus more energy into the bad, thinking that it's good.
Right. And I think that's why, like, subconsciously, I don't do labels and boxes. I just, like, you hear me preach on it all the time about, like, no, you know, deep down, you know right and wrong. You know it in your heart.
Yeah.
Don't, like, who gives a fuck? And I mean no disrespect when I say this, but who gives a fuck what a book says when in your heart you know the opposite?
Yeah.
You know, don't hold credence to something that you have to cherry pick out of.
Yeah.
Because that's not the way to live your life. You know in your heart of hearts, you know in your conscious, you know what is right and what is wrong. And that's... honestly, that's all you need to know. Like, I know that it's kind of a blanket statement, but and it definitely glosses over a lot. But I feel like I'm like you. I get too worried about like putting too much faith in a text or an image or a lesson that was written by man, because man has always had a fucking issue with putting their needs first. Well, if I just tweak this phrase, if I just change, or you know what, I'm just going to add in here, this is what I want them to do. That way they do what I want them to do. That's just the way that it's always been. And it probably always fucking will be. So just don't get caught up in the bullshit.
Yeah. We are very flawed when it comes to that.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's, you know, that's, I build a lot of my life around those thoughts and it's, that's why I just don't label myself, man. 'Cause my mind and knowledge changes every day.
Yeah, I feel that.
You know, so I'm not going to commit to something and have fucking bullshit expectations placed upon me, like chains to the ground, whenever tomorrow I might be on the opposite end of where I was today because of something new that I learned. Yeah, or witnessed, like, or experienced.
The best way to go about it, really. Just keeping, keeping your mind. You can have your own set ideals, but you gotta keep the door to your brain open. Yes. Like you said, especially in our little niche of the world, shit changes every day.
Every day. Every day. And you know, people have opinions about it and thoughts about it, which are no more confirming or damning than your own, because you don't have 100% proof in one way or the other.
Amen to that.
So, I don't know.
It was a circling back around. That was, like I said, that was a banger intro to. I'm sold. I need to know
that's
more
about the cult. That's where I'm at, dude. I'm gonna try to, like I said, finish this book, and if there is two more by him, I'm going to hunt him down. I'm going to figure out which ones they are and see where the trilogy takes it.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty vested in it. That was a hell of an intro. And I'd really like to know his foreshadowing of chaos and shit like that. Yeah, and I'm particularly sold on him right now.
You and Dr. Morris spent a good web on that one.
Huh?
I said you and Dr. Morrow spent a good web of an intro. Dude, on that one.
It's captivating. Like I'm like I said, I'm very, I'm not going to do a bunch of other outside research. I want to know Dr. Morrow. That's what I want to know. I'm vested in him now. So, Dr. Morrow, if you ever hear this, maybe hit us up sometime. Come on the show.
According to this, we're probably going to have to find a different way to go about that.
He might have the keys to it inside his books here.
That's true. That's true. That is true.
Wouldn't that be fucking wild? Oh, yeah. Holy moly.
That would be dope.
That would be insanity.
I'm going to try to find a copy of this thing.
Oh, I am too. I definitely want one. Especially that inverted one that you found the other day. That one was pretty,
yeah,
pretty cool.
One of the pages that I had bookmarked as of when, I swear, when we looked at it the other day, it was not out of stock. It's out of stock now.
No shit.
The one that was like $70.
What color scheme? Gray and black? Yeah, or gray. Black with the,
it was black on gray. So the book is actually gray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, you definitely found one.
Yeah. It's out of
stock. I remember looking at it. How weird is that? That, like, I haven't heard of that book and there's limited prints, and it just, everywhere you look, it's out of stock. The fact that it's actively being out of stock now, that we saw one there and now it's gone, is bizarre to me.
Ooh, I might have one here.
Well, if you do, I don't care if you use hollow money, grab it.
Yeah, I'll mess with it after we get off here.
Yeah.
Anywho, that's the beginning of Dr. Morrow's and the Cult of the Black Cube. If anybody has delved into this, wants to send us some thoughts on it, definitely do. It is more than piqued my interest. Yeah. So thanks for hanging out with us today. Hope this starts your work week off the way it should. And check us out all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, Discord, Reddit. Search up Hollow Sky Podcast. Join the cult. You know the drill. Until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird. And if the deity you're trying to summon demands animal or blood sacrifices. I'm not saying don't. I'm just saying think it through.